Glee cast cover of Katy Perry's Teenage Dream from the second season of Glee, as sung by Darren Criss. Very formative track for my own queer identity and existence, and also just a banger, really. A banger about gay love. And Darren Criss was one of those guys that I tried to convince myself I had a crush on when I was a kid. Not really the case, but still a good song. And then, of course, kicking off the set, we heard from Sydney Lucas, the Fun Home cast, Ring of Keys from Fun Home, the musical. Really, go check that one out, or at least read Bechdel's book. Both wonderful pieces of art. You are tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Mel Woods, bringing you an hour of Pride Broadway show tune fun. It's the best time of the year. I hope you're having a really good Pride, whatever you are getting up to, whether it's dancing the night away or just eating a slice of rainbow cake with your gay pals. And no matter where you fall in the LGBTQIA2+ community, know that I can be your gay pal too. I'm a gay pal with all of y'all. Yeah, I hope you're getting up to good things. Go to the parade, do the things, and just celebrate being great people, being great you. You're the best you can possibly be. And now is a great time to be proud of that. This next set is going to be tracks that are not, like, explicitly queer, but also can be very queer if you think about it quickly. First up, we're going to be hearing from Wicked, which is the greatest story of gal pals this side of, I don't know, I don't have another reference there, but it is very, very gal pally. And I know there is a large repertoire of Glinda Elphaba fanfiction/fanfiction out there in the world. And so we're going to be listening to a track from Wicked. And then after that, we're going to go for the, honestly, I really like to call it a butch icon anthem, which is I'll Make a Man Out of You from Mulan. I don't know. I always sing it in my head when I'm like dressing up all dapper and stuff. I'm like, yeah, I am. You know, I will be as swift as a coursing river. So we're going to listen to those two tracks and then I'll be back in a bit. But first up, Defying Gravity, of course. Because it's also just empowering, like, you want to fly, you know, defying gravity, kiss me goodbye, I'm defying gravity, you know, nothing's going to bring me down. That's how I feel during Pride. I hope it's how you feel during Pride, too. So sing along, wherever you are, if you're on the beach, if you're in your car, if you're walking down the street, belt it like you're Idina Menzel, because you know I'm doing it here in the booth. Enjoy.
Elphaba, why couldn't you have stayed calm for once, instead of flying off the handle? I hope you're happy. I hope you're happy now. I hope you're happy how you hurt your cause forever. I hope you think you're clever. I hope you're happy. I hope you're happy too. I hope you're proud how you would grovel in submission to feed your own ambition. So though I can't imagine how, I hope you're happy right now. Listen to me. Just say you're sorry. You can still be with the wizard. What you've worked and waited for. You can have all you ever wanted.
I know.
But I don't want it.
No.
I can't want it anymore. Something has changed within me. Something is not the same. I'm through with playing by the rules of someone else's game. Too late for second guessing. Late to go back to sleep. It's time to trust my instincts, close my eyes and leap. It's time to try defying gravity. I think I'll try defying gravity, and you can't pull me.
Having delusions of grandeur
through accepting limits. Could
because someone says they're so. Some things I cannot change, but till I try, I'll never know. Too long I've been afraid of losing love I keep sideways. Well, if that's love, it comes at much too high.
Glenda, come with me. Think of what we could do together.
Unlimited. Together we're unlimited. Together we'll be the greatest team there's ever been. Glenda, dreams the way we planned them. If we work in there's no fight we cannot win. Just you and I defying gravity. With you and I defying gravity. They'll never bring us down.
Well, are you coming?
You're happy now that you're choosing this.
You too.
I hope it brings you bliss.
I really hope you get it and you don't live to regret it.
cutting gym.
This guy's got him scared to death.
Hope he doesn't see right through me.
Now I really wish that I knew how to swim.
Speed up,
must miss the bed.
Of a great typhoon, with all the strength of a raging fire, mysterious as the dark side of the moon.
Oh, capital A, capital B, absolute banger right there. I'll Make a Man Out of You from the Mulan soundtrack as sung by Donny Osmond. Again, I think it's an underrated queer anthem. It's a queer anthem to me in my heart. And you bet your buttons, I was singing along as loud as I possibly could. Yeah, here in the booth. Thankfully, the mic turned on for all of your, not turned on for all of your sakes, but so good. So good. And then, of course, before that, we heard from the Wicked original cast soundtrack, Defying Gravity, as sung by Idina Menzel and Kristen Chenoweth. You're tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from unceded Coast Salish Musqueam territory here at the beautiful University of British Columbia campus in Vancouver. My name is Mel Woods, bringing you an hour of Pride show tunes today to celebrate Pride. Here in Vancouver, we're doing a queer programming marathon, if you will, today, and I'm more than happy to contribute with these tracks and just have fun. I think that's what Pride is for me. I'm not a huge, like, clubbing, dancing person, but it's all just about joy. It's about joy in the simplest ways. It's about the joy of singing along to Mulan, but it's also about the joy of hanging out with your queer brothers, sisters, non-binary pals. It's all about just, you know, family and found family and your actual family and all sorts of things like that. Pride is just so many things. And it's all sorts of warm fuzzies in my heart. Yeah, and speaking of warm fuzzies in the heart, the next track we're going to be listening to also comes from Fun Home. I'm double dip in Radioland. I know it's taboo, but we're doing it. And this one is all about the warm fuzzies of hearts of falling in love for the first time. This comes from a scene in the musical where the young kind of freshly figured out lesbian Alison Bechdel sleeps with a lady for the first time, and kind of her feelings after that. And again, very, very relatable to anybody who's been in young love, but particularly young queer love. This is called Changing My Major, as sung by Emily Skaggs from the Fun Home original Broadway soundtrack. And we're listening to it right now. Enjoy.
What happened last night? Are you really here? Joan, 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 Joan. Hi, Joan. Don't wake up, Joan. Oh, my God, last night. Oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, last night. I got so excited, I was too enthusiastic. Thank you for not laughing, well, you laughed a little bit. At one point when I was touching you and said I might lose consciousness, which you said was adorable, and I just have to trust that you don't think I'm an idiot or some kind of an animal. I never lost control due to overwhelming lust, but I must say that I'm
Joan. I'm changing my major to sex with Joan. I'm changing my major to sex with Joan, with a minor in kissing Joan. Foreign study to Joan's inner thighs, a seminar on Joan's ass in her Levi's, and Joan's crazy brown eyes. Joan, I feel like Hercules. Oh God, that sounds ridiculous. Just keep on sleeping through this and I'll work on calming down, so by the time you've woken up, I'll be cool, I'll be collected, and I'll have found some dignity. But who needs dignity? 'Cause this is so much better. I'm radiating happiness. Will you stay here with me for the rest of the semester? We won't need any food. We'll live on sex alone. Sex with Joan. I am writing a thesis on Joan. It's a cutting edge field and my mind is blown. I will gladly stay up every night to hone my compulsory skills with Joan. I will study my way down her spine, familiarize myself with her well-made outline. While she researches mine, I don't know who I am. I've become someone new. Nothing I just did is anything I would do. Overnight, everything changed. I am not prepared. I'm dizzy, I'm nauseous, I'm shaky. I'm scared. Am I falling into nothingness or flying into something so sublime? I don't know. Before I was lying prone in this dorm room bed with Joan. Look, she drooled on the pillow, so sweet, all sweaty and tangled up in my bedsheet. And my heart feels complete. Let's never leave this room. How about we stay here till finals? I'll go to school forever. I'll take out a dementedly huge high-interest loan. 'Cause I'm changing my major to
Emily Skeggs from the Fun Home original Broadway soundtrack. That was Changing My Major. Just a nice way to kind of bring us towards the end of the program here, Radioland. It has been super swell hanging out with all of y'all, sharing some of my absolute favorite queer Broadway anthems with you. And of course, I didn't even get a chance to go through all of them, but there will be another time for that. Yes, almost certainly one day I'm going to find a way to do a show tune edition of my regular radio program, Into the Woods. That time is not this week, but it will be coming soon. And if you do want to catch my other program, the one that airs every single week, 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, here on CITR 101.9 FM and online at CITR.ca, it's called Into the Woods. I play music by women and queer folks. It's pretty on brand for what we're doing right now, but it is a ton of fun, and I hope to hear you there, or have you hear me there, I guess. And if you do want to check out any of CITR's other programming, including all of the wonderful stuff that aired today to celebrate Pride 2018, head to CITR.ca. There's been so much good radio coming out today, and I'm excited to go back and re-listen to it all, add it to my regular rotation of sounds to accompany my bus rides and whatnot. But yeah, and then my last wish I will leave with all of you, Radioland, is that you have a very happy Pride. Whatever that kind of happiness is for you, however you can celebrate, whether it is quietly and softly due to your own safety, or whether it is loud and in the streets, I hope that you find joy, this Pride, in the little things and in the big things. Eat a piece of rainbow cake, kiss somebody you love, do all of those great things. And kind of on that note, I'm going to leave us with one more track. It's another double dip. Don't sue me. But it is kind of a special one, I think. It's one that's worth double dipping for. It's a special track. It's not even just explicitly a queer track, but it really much makes me, again, think about Pride, think about myself, think about the other queer people that I love in my life, and just love in general, and how it's a really, really great thing. So... without further ado, of course, this is Seasons of Love from Rent. Happy Pride, everyone.
Celebrate Pride 20 Gay Teen with CITR-FM. Tune in August 1st to hear 12 hours of LGBTQIA2S+ content from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. You can listen in on 101.9 FM or at CITR.ca. We're kicking off Pride at UBC in style with a free daytime event. On August 1st, sashay your way to the U Commons area outside the Nest from 4 p.m. onwards to celebrate diversity, inclusion, and positive space at UBC. There will be a public disco with feel-good disco and house anthems, craft beer, and a drag and dress-up trunk. There will also be live mural painting with a selection of food trucks on site with special Pride-themed menus. Come to UBC Pride on August 1st.
really done with politics as usual.
But then it's all about the competition.
Every Vancouverite has their own story.
The perfect time for our alternative.
Vancouver's municipal election looms. October 20th. Do you know who's running for
city council, school board, parks board?
This is a wacky municipal election, and you're going to want to stay updated. Download Seeking Office, the newest municipal elections podcast from CITR's News Collective. Find Seeking Office on iTunes and Stitcher, or wherever you download your podcasts, starting July 3rd.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory at UBC. And today is special programming for Pride 2018. In this next hour, we have a rebroadcast of Unceded Airwaves' last episode for Season 3. It aired on May 9th originally. So, Unceded Airwaves asked Twitter to send in their dating questions. For the last episode, they answered all of your dating problems, platonic problems, and sexual problems, from hickeys to self-love to how dominance is related to colonialism. They were all answered by a couple of honorary aunties. So, the Unceded Airwaves cohort wanted to thank their guests Sam Nock and Emily Riddle for being open and available and vulnerable as the aunties of the day. And also thank you to Autumn Schnell, Ben Chung, and Madison Singh for being hosts for the day. So this is Dating Advice with Indigenous Aunties on CITR for 2018.
You're listening to Unceded Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM, and we have some extra special guests in-house. We have Sam Nock here, and we have Emily Riddle, who is called in. So this episode is entirely about dating advice, but it could be dating in many terms. So it could be like platonic intimacy, and it could be like hookup tips. And the first one that we're going to start with is stance on hickey. So how do you feel about hickey, Sam?
I feel like they had a time and place when you're like 14, but now maybe it's not so cool to go into work with a big hickey on your neck.
We talked about Sam's Instagram bio being hickey hater.
Yeah, that was a little preamble before we were on air. Was that it's gonna be my new Insta handle? Is gonna be hickey hater. I didn't know I hated hickeys until about 30 seconds ago when I really thought about it.
What about you, Emily?
You're asking me to take a hard stance. I think I would be anti-hickey, especially anti-non-consensual hickey where you don't know that's going to happen.
Okay, but what if it's a hickey somewhere that you can't see?
I guess that's a little different. Because I have an office job, but I can't go into work. Like, I have to change my outfit if I'm going to have a huge hickey on my neck.
Yeah, I teach kids.
Okay, but not on your neck.
They also hurt.
That's like, true.
No.
Okay, so this one was, I'm not going to say anybody's names, except I'm going to say this person's name. Dave Gertner is going to have a baby. Congratulations, Dave. Do you guys know Dave Gertner?
Yeah, congrats, Dave.
Yeah.
Definitely. That's awesome.
He has two kids, and a third one is due in 5 weeks, and he's wondering what, he said they probably have one date left before the baby is due, and he wants to know what his date should be.
Lamaze class? I don't know.
This is very different than my life.
Yeah.
Three kids, but I think they, like, you have to do something without the kids, and I think, like, a fancy meal would be my...
But should he make the meal, or should they go for a meal?
They should go for a meal.
Someone else has to make the meal, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like a fancy meal, no kids, and like, yeah.
But where? Where are your suggestions?
Oh.
My go-to is Burgoo.
Yeah.
Because it's a nice atmosphere, casual food, still feels a little fancy, and it's like decently priced. So
a reasonable
for the budget.
Free ad for Burgoo.
Emily, where do you think?
Burgoo's really good. I don't know. I don't go for fancy food. I eat at home a lot. I'm trying to think. I mean, you and I go to Nuba a lot.
Yeah, I was going
to
say Nuba.
Nuba too. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. And then, so friendship breakups, how do you deal with them? And what calls for a friendship breakup? Emily, do you want to start with this one?
What calls for a friendship breakup?
Yeah.
I'm trying to recall my other friendship breakups. I feel like I don't have very many friends that I, like, that I have fundamental differences with in terms of values and politics. So that often calls for a friendship breakup.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. How do I deal with them?
Yeah.
I think friendship breakups are a lot more upsetting than intimate relationship breakups for me.
I agree with that. And I think friendship breakups happen for the same reason you have romantic breakups, where your needs aren't being met in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I don't think they're that different, but I do think they are way more heartbreaking because, I don't know, maybe this is just like looking too far into my relationship building and I'm really outing myself right now. But I feel like romantic relationships just have like a ticking clock that there is going to be an end. Date me, I'm single, guys. Whereas platonic relationships, there isn't that like looming thing where like, oh, is there going to be a breakup? And then when you have to do the friend breakup because your needs aren't being met in specific ways and it could be different for different contexts,
mm-hmm.
it's way more sad. / friends are
That's
better
really
than dating.
True.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, there's very few romantic relationships that I'm in where I'm like, this is going to be forever. Like maybe once in my life I've ever felt like that. But for friends, like I'm not like, oh, I see this ending. So that makes sense.
I've never had that for my romantic relationships. I'm always like, this is going to end. We should have just been friends.
True.
Yeah, relatable.
And then what about bad roommates? We've all had them. How do you deal?
I've had the same roommate for 6 years.
Lucky.
I live alone, or I've lived alone for 3 years, so like I'm my own bad roommate.
Yeah.
That's my own relationship to contend with.
I used to have, before I moved in with my current roommate, I had some roommates that, they weren't bad people. They're just like, we're very different. They're just like such party girls. And I was like going through one of my many existential crises I had during university. And my way of dealing with it was not leaving my room, to the point where my mom bought me this pasta maker that you just have to put boiled water into my pasta. And you just, like, let it sit, and I would, like, drain it out my window. This is in Marine Drive dorms, by the way. And just, like, make my food in my room, my sad
okay,
pasta.
Okay, but, like, was the pasta good?
No.
Oh.
No. Like, al dente, not even. And I would just eat that in my room, and then when they'd leave, I would come out of my room and do my dishes.
And then prepare to make pasta again tomorrow.
Yeah, second year is really good for me.
It's like all relationships that if you let things build up and like start to resent the person, then things are going to go badly. Just like be direct about your like minor problems with the dishes or like what someone said to you, and then you can like extinguish the fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's like
until you like hate who you're living with, which is a super awkward situation to be in.
It is super awkward. Like the roommate I've had now, we've been roommates, like I said, for 6 years, and I think it's worked so well. Because we weren't friends before we moved in. We were randomly assigned roommates at UBC, and then we moved out together. So we were roommates, and then we became really close friends, and we're super open about everything, like the most gross mm-hmm. amount of communication you could ever think of. So I think like that's the reason it works.
Don't you have cats together, too?
We also co-parent cats.
Does anybody ever think you're in a romantic relationship?
Literally everyone.
How do you tackle that?
I don't.
Like, okay.
Like, literally, I don't believe you're not either.
We're not. We're just pure Boston wives. It's just a sexless marriage is what it is.
Classic. Okay, so this one was also from someone who I'm really close with, my brother. He told me I was allowed to tell this story. So
by the way, a good friend of mine, so I will, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We were, I guess he was in Inuvik a couple of years ago, which if you don't know, that's on Treaty 11 territory. You could probably also do your research to find that out. I don't have to tell you this. But we were in Inuvik, and that's where we're from. And like everybody's our cousin there. We have so many cousins there. Everybody with like last name Cooey, Firth, Blake, etc. Basically every name there we're related to. And so he told me he was like talking to this really cute gal at a bar, and they like started making out, I guess, and then when they were done he was like, and what's your name again? And her last name was Cooey, which is also our last name, which you might find disgusting, but that's if you're not native and you have never been to Inuvik, because everybody that we're related to there, everybody that is there we're related to, so it's actually quite common, I'm sure. So how do you deal with your family trees on your land, on your territory.
There's a reason I moved to Vancouver. So my three family names are Morin, Bouvier, and Lafleur, to which if you go to probably Edmonton, going east and north into Saskatchewan is everyone. So I moved here.
Have you had that experience too, Sam, or similar, or known anybody with those experiences? Like, is it common?
I think it's like, I think it's pretty common, okay. Especially up where it's like very rural, yeah. Like northern Saskatchewan, where there's like 500 people.
And you're related to like 340 of them.
I'm pretty sure like everyone's related to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Emily?
I guess it hasn't been a problem for me. I guess I've dated quite a few Cree people from Alberta and Saskatchewan, and we just like hashed out who our family is, and it's fine. I don't know.
Beforehand, so you like wrote out the entire map.
I feel like it's just as much of a problem in Vancouver because there's so many Korean Métis people here.
True, actually.
Like, you can't run away from it. So.
That's true. I remember distinctly, like, a few years ago, there was, like, this Métis dude that I was like, oh. And I was like, what are your families? Where are you from? And he's from Saskatchewan, he told me. And I was like, never mind.
I know you're cooking.
I hear there's a Morin in your mix.
But I feel like it's been stigmatized a little bit because if you look at like the Cree kinship system or like what we call sweethearts is nishimos, which means cousin. So you would marry your cross cousin in marriage. So like, I don't know. That's obviously been a cultural change for us.
Yeah.
But like traditionally.
Yeah.
Huh.
Which traditionally the Europeans were marrying their cousins too. So.
So like, yeah, don't judge us.
Hella marrying their cousins.
I mean, isn't that still happening? Isn't that legal in, like, Texas or something?
I think it's, like, legal here.
That's true.
Yeah.
But it's, like, legal to marry your first cousin or something in Texas?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's been confirmed.
Confirmed.
Fact check this.
Fact check through Ben Chung. And then... incompatible traumas. Why do we all end up dating white people, and how do we overcome incompatible traumas?
Oh, this is such a light and easy question.
It got progressively heavier.
The biggest question there is on this show right now.
I mean, if I had the answer to this, my life wouldn't be on the trajectory it is.
It's a hard one.
Do you have an answer, Emily?
No, I just make memes about this.
And post them on Instagram and Twitter.
That is the answer.
Yeah, that's what I do. Yeah, and it comes down to, like, not even just dating other Native people. I think just dating anyone whose people have been colonized. There's, like, specific traumas, so mm-hmm. I don't know the answer.
But I think it makes it a lot harder when you, like, bring in, like, status to the mix because it makes you want to date someone who also has status so your baby's lineage can be the same as yours or at least, like, considered the same as yours. So it, like, makes it a lot, you know?
Yeah, it's super, like, explaining that to people who aren't Native is so weird. Like, if I have children with you, my kids can't be a member of my community, blah, blah, blah. Like, people are like, what are you even talking about?
And you're like, listen, I've thought about this since I was four.
Yeah, that's another layer for sure.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of, like, incompatible traumas, and I think... it's not so much having incompatible traumas. It's more, I think, when two people who have survived under colonization are dating, they have the same traumas. Mm-hmm. And often or not, we are working through them, especially when we're young. We're, for the most part, I think, firstly, beginning to face what that means kind of really ingrained in us. And so when two people who have survived under colonization are dating and are entering a romantic relationship, which is super close and intimate, those things tend to surface. And so I think you kind of have two pathways where you're just like, I can't do this. Like, fuck this. I like, I'm freaking out. Mm-hmm. Or you trauma bond. And it's like this really unhealthy codependence thing. Mm-hmm. So I think we all just start dating white people because we think it's easier. But it's not.
It's not.
It's just a different kind of labor.
Yeah.
It is.
And I think sometimes it's like, it's easier to put in that labor. But also, sometimes it's not.
I think it's how...
It's hard to say which one's easier.
I don't think one is easier.
I think they can be easier at different times.
Yeah, I look like... This is also not going to help my romantic life.
Don't share this with people who you're romantically interested in.
Oh, Lord. I've dated Indigenous folks, and it's been really terrible. Or not really terrible. That's not a good thing to say. That was a slip. It's been really difficult. Yeah. Like, really difficult. And I've dated white people, and that felt like a vacation. Like, you're going to, like, their mom Deborah's house for Thanksgiving dinner, and you're just going to sit there and eat the turkey and just, like, turn off their part of your brain. We're like, oh, sweet Lord, what is happening? Because you're just like, I'm here for your butter and Brussels sprouts, Brenda. Like, just give it to me. And then you kind of go about your merry way, and then there's, like, something happens, something slips, and you're like, shit, this person's really white. Uh-huh. And then it just becomes more exhausting than it was in your previous relationships. So yeah. I don't think one's easier. I think you can just kind of delay, refer your payments.
Yeah.
I want both. I want the butter and the Brussels sprouts and the, like, understanding without the trauma, like, complete trauma bonding cloud over the relationship. Mm-hmm. High standards.
Yeah. So many high standards.
God, I just want to date someone who...
I just want basic respect and understanding.
And good Brussels sprouts at the same time.
Yeah.
Okay, so this one was another question that was sent in to us. But I know a lot of Indian peeps who have specific perspectives on dating white people. In uni, this person was very against dating white people because they didn't think they would... get it with the, like, fancy little, like, dashes that are squiggly, like, you know, like, get it. But now I'm happily dating a white guy. Interested in your thoughts, experiences, and discussion. What do you think, either of you?
So I have a white dad and a native mom, so I feel like that definitely influences how I think about gender, and that my, like, understanding of masculinity is, like, an Albertan white dad.
Same.
My understanding of femininity is like a tiny Cree, bossy Cree woman.
Same. Except without the Cree.
Except for not Cree. I don't know where I was going with that, but I don't have a hard sense about not dating white people, but my friends and I have a pact this year that we're not dating any white men.
No cishet white men!
Yeah, this year, and that is still ongoing, so 2018 is not a thing.
2018, you mean?
2018, no white men.
I'm currently in a relationship with a white lady, which is, it's been pretty good so far. There's no complaints. But I don't know, I think it's really hard when you date specifically white men, because mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of, like, toxic masculinity that manifests in that, like, can be, like, re-traumatizing, or, like, it can bring me back to certain things.
I've definitely dated my share. Again, I feel like I'm outing myself. I cannot leave the studio after this. I'm thinking back to, like, my most recent kind of, like, heartbreak. We weren't dating, but it was, like, somebody I had, like, this, like, long-standing crush on, and then, like, told them, and they're like, nah, I don't want to date you right now, / ever, but you're a really great person, and I have so much to learn from you, which I think is just the most quintessential white dude thing to say, mm-hmm. is, like, you're super sick, like, you know so much, you're so smart, but I don't want to date you because I have so much to learn from you. And you're just like, cool.
I shouldn't be your educator.
I shouldn't be your educator, A. And why does that, like, what does that have to do with dating me? Mm-hmm. Like, it was such, like, a, okay, like, that makes no sense. Why am I supposed to be here as your platonic friend that you're still going to just mine for emotional labor and knowledge? Mostly about Indigenous politics and feminism. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, cool. So I just get to be, like, the fat Native woman that, like, raises you up to be a good boy to some white girl. Cool.
Yes.
Which is basically sums up any relationship I've had with a white guy.
Yeah.
I feel the opposite. I feel like all the relationships I've been in with Native men in particular, they, like, idealize the relationship or idealize me and demand all this extra labor. So, I don't know. Like, there's problems both ways. Now a train's going to go by, so I'm going to walk away. I'm outside right now.
My response, 2018. Yeah. Anyways, on the topic of gayness.
Great response.
How to pick up ladies. This one was also sent in to us, and I don't know how to do that.
stare at them for a long time until they get uncomfortable and you become embarrassed and then never talk to them again. It's really worked for me.
Okay, befriend them like really well and then just stay friends forever and be a useless lesbian.
That's just my dating advice in general.
What about you, Emily? What's your advice?
I'm the worst at asking people out. I feel like most of the people I've dated ask me out. But yeah, just make it super obvious for a really long time until like you like me and I'm like, yep.
Okay, but wait, what about the useless lesbian thing? Even if you're not a lesbian, this counts for anybody who's in like a singular gender relationship. But
girl on girl relationship?
Yeah. The useless lesbian thing where like you can do that and like make it really obvious that you think, but they're just like, we're best friends. We get to go to like Cactus Club and drink sangria on Saturdays because we're best friends. How do you deal
with
that?
Probably better that way anyway.
It literally, you know what? Just like ride that out. Like, that's going to be more fulfilling.
Okay. And then this is the last one on queerness before the break, and we have to play some commercials. But how to be queer when your Jiju, which is what I would say, or your cook'em, as you two would say, disagrees with it. I think that one's a hard one. How do you tell
my cook'em's not around?
Okay.
But like my family and everyone like doesn't care. I was raised in a hair salon, so there was like a lot of queer people around all the time.
I've been thinking a lot about this, and kind of thinking a lot about like the coming out culture and how, you know, there's like National Coming Out Day, blah 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 blah. And it's not to erase like non-Indigenous folks or whatever, like, experience coming out, because that can be super traumatic for, I think, every queer person.
Yeah.
But I think if you look within, in, like, Indigenous kinship and the communities, coming out has so much put on it where, like, it's not just your cook, I'm not accepting it. It's your entire community, which is your entire lifeline. And so I've been, like, so my cook, I'm doesn't know. Most of my family doesn't know I'm queer. And so, like, I'm really quiet about it. Because, like, I don't want to kill her. I don't know what you do.
I don't know either. I know that Inuvik just had their first Pride Parade, which is really cool.
Oh, that's great.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
It's a town of, like a little town of 2,000 people, and apparently 100 people attended the Pride Parade, so that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, I feel like most people there aren't, either, like, aren't accepting of queer people or, like, are queer themselves and just don't want to say anything because it's way easier to pretend to be straight and like kiss your cousins.
Oh my goodness, Autumn.
I'm calling my brother out. About the kissing cousins things, at least. But yeah, I don't know. It just, that one's a big one that I don't know how to tackle. I came up with that question. That was me.
It was a big question.
It is a big question. But yeah, so we're going to take a little break now. I'll play a short little song by Quantum Tangle about being queer. And then we're going to be back. So yeah, enjoy this song.
Thank you. Club Cycling is hosting Bike to Shop Days on June 22nd to June 24th. Come out and get advice on the gear and techniques that allow you to easily use your bike for shopping trips. There will be route maps for shopping, celebration stations, which have info, snacks, and free bike tune-ups, discounts at local shops around Metro Vancouver, a passport challenge where participants collect stamps at celebration stations to win prizes, guided rides, and riding to local stores to show support. Check out bikehub.ca for more information.
Member of CITR and Discorder, but are you a true friend?
Get a Friends of CITR and Discorder card for $20 for discounts in Hastings Sunrise at
Beat Street Records, Bomber Brewing, Community Vintage and Thrift, Community Thrift and Vintage, Pandora's Box Rehearsal Studios, Red Cat Records, and Selectors Records.
You're listening to Unseated Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM. The time is 2:46 p.m., and we're back with Sam and Emily. We have some questions. So the first one was just sent in to me by someone, and it was, my roommate has been crashing in my bed for the past week, and I'm finding that I have a lot of discomfort around sharing that space, more than having my own personal needs around alone time and being grumpy and being a grumpy hermit. And it got me thinking about platonic versus romantic slash sexual relationships, and I'm often less down to be physically close or intimate with platonic friends than romantic partners. This is with my queer dude friends, straight guys, women friends, etc. What's up with that? I think it's a hard one.
I think, like, okay, first of all, your roommate crashing in your bed. So my roommate will crash in my bed too, and I have, like, no patience for it because I hate sharing my bed so passionately. And this includes, like, people I'm dating. I just do not like sharing my bed. And so I literally just, like, will shake her until she wakes up. And I'm just like, get the fuck out. Like, you are being evicted. Go to your own bed that you pay rent for. And then we have a fight and she goes to her own bed. But I think in terms of the closeness with platonic, feeling uncomfortable with platonic relationships over romantic, I think we live in kind of a society in general that doesn't value romantic or platonic relationships as, like, a legitimate form of relationship. And there's so much emphasis put on romantic relationships that we're not really taught how to be intimate with our platonic friends in a way that we don't see being blurred with romantic. Mm-hmm. And so things like closeness, like physical closeness, intimacy and vulnerability with platonic friends is expected to a certain extent, but you're also expected to save a portion of that for your romantic relationships. And so I think being physically intimate, not like boning your friends, but like hugging,
like cuddling
and like stuff like that, like, I think is, if it's your thing, that's totally cool. But also sometimes physical intimacy isn't your thing. Like, I am not a hugger. I am not, like, a real touchy person. So I think it's just however you're comfortable kind of expressing that kind of intimacy is totally fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything else, Emily?
No, that totally makes sense to me. I think you have to tell your roommate to not sleep in your bed.
Yeah, you definitely need to have that conversation.
Get out me bed. Have any of you seen the Vine where it's like, beep, beep, I'm in me mom's car?
No.
Oh, and then the mom's like, get out me car. Okay, so this one's another heavy one, but I think it's kind of funny if you want it to be funny. So, are white people who are dom in bed the extended hand of colonialism?
Oh, that's a good one.
I want to say yes. But just because everything's interrelated, especially with...
No, I feel like not, because, like, hopefully if you have an actual dom relationship, like, you're the one that's consenting to it as the sub and ultimately, like, driving things. So I don't really see it as an extension of colonialism because, because we didn't consent to colonialism. And if you have a dom relationship with someone, then you, like, hopefully consent to that. If not, that's, like, sexual assault and not a sexual, healthy sexual relationship.
I don't understand a lot of kink.
Yeah.
And I kind of just, like, nod and smile my way through conversation. and I also feel like you can't have open conversations about it. And I think this is a really great question because I feel like a lot of conversations around kink communities are very, very white.
Yeah.
And they don't look at those power structures in between people of color and white people and how that can play out in the bedroom. I feel like I'm in like a really weird like Ask Susan like sex advice column right now.
Okay.
So like
the real Dan Savage.
Sam Savage. I'm gonna be sued. I'm gonna get a cease and desist order. But what I'm saying is like I don't really have the answer for that because like I'm my own personal discomforts and thoughts around kink in terms of power dynamics.
Yeah.
Which doesn't say I'm, like, anti, like, do what you're gonna do.
Yeah.
But, it's kind of how I feel about hickeys. But, I think there's some real power dynamics that play out, I think, rather insidiously.
Yeah.
And
I think, like, the most important thing is just having a conversation with your partner and talking about it.
Definitely.
And then maybe it won't be the extended hand of colonialism. It'll just be your thing.
Yeah, I feel like, oh, never mind, I shouldn't say that.
Okay, cool. So this one is my question. How do you deal with Native dudes who tell you that feminism doesn't exist?
Don't.
Yeah, I don't really, but I told you, Autumn, that I think, like, feminism is a tool that we have, just like anything else. And so, like, for me, all these Native bros have all these skidoos and shit, and they're always like, there's no problem. I'm still traditional when I hunt like this. Like, why can't we have feminism as the same sort of tool?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's fair. And then also talking about feminism, but this one's just specifically with women, not with, like, other genders and, like, other sexualities. But many Indian dudes love to claim to love strong women until we actually exercise that strength in a relationship. And then it's run to the hills time. Can you tell the fronters from the heroes and when to give up on the guy that just can't take the heat?
Oh, if I could tell, my life would be very different too. I think that's really true of like, of not just men, of lots of people want to date strong women until they are actually faced with the fact that they all disagree with them or hold them to their shit.
I think it's, sorry, were you done?
Go ahead, sorry.
I think it's kind of encapsulated this like really like neoliberal idea of feminism, whereas there's all these like dudes, especially like cis straight dudes, are just like, I am a feminist. I want to date a strong woman. But the entire time they're like touting this politic, they have no one to ever hold them accountable, and then they're like, I'm gonna date a strong woman because it's gonna look good, and then they do, and then someone's holding them accountable, and they run. And I think in terms of being able to find like differentiate between who's fronting and who's real is just you can't.
It's hard.
And I mean, I think even if there is someone who's fronting, that's like having a meltdown, depending on how invested you are, like that could be a really good processing or a really good conversation, because I think especially with Indigenous men, there is a lot of space they haven't had to learn, especially about their own masculinity and the kind of how that is taken up in colonial power and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So, I mean, depending on your level of investment, it could be like a really good conversation. My general level of investment right now in teaching anybody is like, no,
none.
Like read a book,
Google it.
But I think, there's no way to tell.
Yeah. Call them out.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from that,
make vague Twitter postings is my go-to.
The best go-to. And then they say that living well is the best revenge. What really is the best revenge though? In terms of relationships, I'm assuming.
In terms of breakups.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know, because I was trying to think of all my exes and if I've ever sought revenge on them.
That's probably a good thing, Emily.
Yeah, it's true. Like, I'm not friends with them, or a lot of them aren't in my life. But I don't have negative feelings towards any of my exes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I guess what is the best revenge? There's no revenge.
Yeah, I would say for me, it would probably be living well because, like, again, I don't really have many exes and I don't, like, want to get back at them.